Okay, Ron Van Dam may not be the prettiest face in radio, but come on, that voice, am I right? You are listening to Ron Van Dam, the sexiest voice in podcasting on New England Broadcasting.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
All right. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I can prove it. Here it is. It's me. I'm talking. What more proof do you need? I'm certainly not Oprah. I'm maintaining my proper weight, so I'm not her. How are you feeling today? You know, I'm the only talk show host that asks you that. I'm the only one that cares about you. I am. The rest, they don't care. They seriously don't care. I have a deep feeling of emotion for you. Let's just say that I do. Hey, if you're driving in your car right now listening to the program, your left turn blinker has been on for about 7 miles, you idiot. You know who I'm talking to. You know. You have a green Chevy Malibu, license plate number 723WA6. Your lights are on. What? Oh, it's nighttime. Okay, then. You're good. Well, I do have an interesting program for you today. Question is, will I relay it to you? Probably not. Are you hungry? Huh? Are you hungry? What do you want me to do about it? Why don't you just stop off somewhere and get something to eat? What kind of problem are you? So, Monday, a couple days ago, Wendy's was introducing their breakfast sandwich, and McDonald's nearly peed their pants because collective pants. Because that would be a direct competition to their Egg McMuffin or their Sausage McMuffin. So what they did was they said on Monday, I don't know if you took advantage of this, on Monday they were doing free Egg McMuffins. Uh-huh. I'm telling you now because it's too late. But here was the catch. See, I was going to get in my car and drive to McDonald's and order like 2,000 Egg McMuffins. I'm sure there was a limit on how many you can get. But then I read a little bit further. You can't drive to McDonald's and get it. You have to order it online. What the fuck? Why would I order an Egg McMuffin online? What's your mentality? Millennials, what the Generation X's? You're ordering everything online to the point where now it's an Egg McMuffin? Are you serious? What kind of world are you living in? So obviously I didn't get my free Egg McMuffin. I don't know how to order an Egg McMuffin online. I don't even know how to order it when I pull up to the speaker at the drive-thru. That confuses me. No matter what I order at these drive-thru things, they're always trying to sell me something else, like an Egg McMuffin. Do you want a steak dinner with that? What are you talking about? Why are you upselling me at a McDonald's? What? I can understand if it's like an oil filter place where they're going to try to upsell me to the more expensive oil. I get that. I mean, I don't like to be upsold, but I understand that. But upselling me at a drive-thru? I mean, do you want fries with that? Did I ask for fries, moron? No, I didn't. Therefore, I probably don't want them. Are there people actually that from the mere suggestion go, sure? If you go, sure, why didn't you order fries before? It's not like fries are free. Do you want fries with it? Well, sure. Do you want to pay for something that you didn't want to begin with? No. I didn't. And besides, why are you hiding behind that little speaker thing? Come on out where I can see you. That could change my mind drastically. Upselling me. Some teenager with pimples is trying to upsell me. I don't think so. I'm older than you are. No one upsells me who has pimples. That was kind of cruel, actually. A child does not choose to have acne. It's something that is thrusted upon them by society and the dietary restrictions not placed on them by their parents. It's not their fault. As a matter of fact, I didn't have acne as a child, but I had friends who had acne, and eventually I wouldn't talk to them because they had acne. I'm kidding. That's stupid. Just being sarcastic, that's all. Do you even know what sarcastic means? Millennials? Do you still go to school or is everything homeschooled for you? Homeschool. Give me a break. If you can learn how to speak English and lie on a bed and masturbate, is that homeschool? I think it is. I think it is. I'm sorry I said that. That wasn't right. I didn't ask for the kids to leave the room, and they probably heard a word that they shouldn't know about just yet. Just like the Santa Claus debacle, they're not supposed to know about that. So could you kindly ask your children to leave the room for maybe 6 years? How about that? Johnny, I want you to leave the room for 6 years. 6 years? I said six. You want to make it seven? You want to make it seven? Anyway, welcome to the program. What kind of road was that? Sometimes I go down a road and I don't know what's at the end of the road. I have no idea. It's usually a dead end. That was analogous to what I do on the show. So, well, yesterday was Super Tuesday, huh? Yep, many, many states in this fine country of ours went to the polls, especially on the Democratic side, and many of the independent sides, to choose who they might want as president. And nicely, the numbers of people going out to vote was explosive. That's a good sign. And it's not even the election yet, so that's pretty cool. Here are some shockers that happened from yesterday. You see, if you don't get your news from any place other than this show, you are pathetic. And I mean that in a very soft, loving way. Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, lost Massachusetts. Where did I put it? I lost it. Joe Biden won Massachusetts. Bernie Sanders came in second. And Elizabeth Warren, who's a senator in Massachusetts, came in third. Liz, you see that suitcase over there? Pack it. Get out of here. It's time for you to announce your bye-bye speech.
Hi, my supporters. I thank you for everything. We had a great campaign, but I just don't see the numbers leading me to the White House, so I'm going to step aside and I'm going to support myself.
Elizabeth, you know what the problem is, Elizabeth? You're like a 65, 70-year-old cheerleader. I don't know how old you are. You look kind of old. Very much like your friend Hillary Clinton. I don't know if you're friends or not. This pantsuit thing is just, she had the pantsuit. You have this black shirt and then you wear different color jackets over it. Boring. No president's going to look like that in my nation. Liz, pack the bags. It's over. Clear the field, please. Attention candidates that aren't winning anything, clear the field immediately. Congratulations to Michael Bloomberg. What, Ron? What are you talking about? Why would you congratulate him? Because he actually won a state. Really? Was it Texas? Was it Arkansas? No, not even close. What state did he win? American Samoa. What did you just say? Americans, Samoa. What? Is that a breakfast food? I have the, give me the corned beef hash, two eggs over easy, and an American Samoa. American Samoa is a territory. Where is it? Is it off the coast of California? No. It's off the coast of New Zealand. Excuse me. What? It's a tiny little part of an island. It's part of an island chain down near Australia, New Zealand. Just in American water. I didn't know American waters went all the way down there, to be honest with you. It's smack dab in the bottom part of the Pacific Ocean. It's in the Northern Hemisphere, but kind of just. It is so far away that we forgot we had it. It actually voted as a state yesterday in Super 2. I know. I did not. You know, if this show does anything, it educates you. Therefore, it does nothing. If you're going to learn anything, it's that American Samoa, I can't even say it, is down near New Zealand, and it's part of the American chain of fun. And it voted overwhelmingly for Michael Bloomberg. He won that territory. Mike, you're on the road to success. I got to tell you, Mike. So the question is, you probably have for me at this point, even though I can't hear you because this is a one-way deal. Ron, how many people, what is the population of American Samoa? Are you ready for this? 55,000 people. Excuse me? I have more people than that in my sleepy little town. 55,000 people? That's nothing. That's the whole place? Yes. And it overwhelmingly went for Michael Bloomberg. I don't even think they can see his television commercials. I don't know how that happened. I don't know. That Gabbert lady who nobody votes for here, she came in second. Kind of place is this? What? How disconnected can you be? Well, near New Zealand, that's pretty disconnected from them, from the United States. Holy crap. I thought Alaska was like that. No, it's American Samoa, Ron. I don't understand what that is. Is there a Samoa that isn't American? Yes, there is. Oh. This is fascinating to the point where it kind of doesn't matter, does it? Now, of course, if you're a resident of American Samoa, you probably are very proud of your tiny little island. What the hell do you want me to do about it? I mean, should you be getting a vote with 55,000 people in your territory? No, you shouldn't. I don't think it makes a great deal of difference who you vote for in American Samoa when you're that far away. Seriously. All right. I hope you've learned something, because this is how I live. All right. You are so patient with me. You really are. I don't know how you do it. I would not be this patient with you. I got to tell you right now, I'd be out of here by now, but you are, you got stuff going on. You got stuff going on. Very cool.
We don't get to choose our family names. We're born into them, and some of them are, quite frankly, a little embarrassing. For many, a burden that follows them through life. If you've got an embarrassing last name, you may have thought about having it legally changed, but perhaps you've thought it might be complicated and expensive. Well, I'm here to tell you that having your last name legally changed is simple and cost-effective and will take that lifelong burden away in just a few easy steps. Call me today, Attorney Jim Cockwaffle, with the offices of Cockwaffle and Cumstein. We know what you're going through.
I can't. Every time I hear that commercial, I just lose it. I have to change my pants immediately. All righty. I'm sorry. Welcome to the show, by the way. How you doing? Good to see you. We have a great guest coming up a little bit later in the program, which is getting pretty close to now, and you'll be fascinated and dazzled by the artistry and the physical dexterity of our guest. I don't know. I would love to have a pantomime artist as a guest on the program. There would be probably 10 minutes of silence, but it would blow you away with the artistry. I live in the Boston area. There's a place in Boston called Faneuil Hall where these street performers gather, and they street perform. The ones that I can't watch because they just make me sick are the pantomime artists. I don't know what it is about them. I think they're mocking a disability. There's something, I just feel like shouting at these performers, what are you doing? Please explain what you're doing. Then I realize that would ruin the art of pantomime. And then I realize, let's ruin the art of pantomime. What the hell are you doing? How can I stand there and applaud somebody pulling on a rope or making believe they're stuck in a box? This is artistry. Well, Ron, that's because there is no rope and there is no box. Well, now this is absurd. Go out, buy a box, buy a rope, and let's see you perform then. Will it be interesting? No, it won't. So why are you doing it? And why do they have to paint their faces white? I thought we kind of got through that, you know, in a previous generation. Why do you need to paint your face? And why do pantomime artists look so sad? You know the answer. Because it's pathetic. And it finally gets through to them. They're doing something quite sad artistically. I can't do the pantomime artist. Can you imagine being married to one? What are you thinking about? What's on your mind? What are you thinking about? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you thinking about? What are you doing? Then again, being married to a pantomime artist wouldn't be so bad. There'd be no stupid conversation, no idle chatter about your day. It would just be quiet all the time. Wait a minute, that sounds wonderful. What if you're a pantomime artist and a contortionist? Heaven. That means you shut up, yet you do incredible sexual moves with your body. There it is. And a nymphomaniac. Oh my God. I'm starting to build my own wonderful spouse here. It's like Build-A-Bear, those teddy bears. You can put various characteristics into the bear and build it yourself. How about build a spouse? Somebody's missing the boat on this. Can it be an app? Can it be an app? Can I order an Egg McMuffin online through the app? For free. Okay. All right. My guest joins me now. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. Lisa Gable joins us now. She's an expert in what we're going to be talking about. She served two presidents and two governors and been the head of many organizations. We're talking about food allergies today and food allergy reactions, how you handle them. Thanks for being with us.
Well, I appreciate being invited.
Before we start, and I'm sure you're asked this 1,000 times, when I was growing up, and I think I'm a little older than you, I'm not sure. When I was growing up, there were no such thing as food allergies. There probably were, but we never had a phrase like that. And now, for some reason, this is a major topic, and a lot of people have allergies to things. And when you go into restaurants, they even ask you as a server, do you have any food allergies? Wasn't like that when I was growing up. Are there more cases, or is just something? This just something we've discovered is a thing?
No, there are more cases. It's an epidemic. Since 1998, we've seen this exponential rise in life-threatening food allergies, and that's really something for people to understand. These are food allergic reactions that result in anaphylaxis, which requires somebody to take epinephrine and go to the emergency room immediately. So we're not talking about food sensitivities. There are a couple of reasons why we think this has happened. With right now, 32 million Americans, as you said, pre-1998, that number wasn't one that we were calculating. Two kids in every classroom. But there were certain things that took place, like we have what's called the hygiene theory. We became very, very clean at that point in time. People moved into the cities. You saw a rise in life-threatening food allergies, eczema, and asthma. You know, lots of Purell use, lots of wiping down things. And then secondarily is that we were telling pregnant mothers not to eat the allergens and not to feed them to young children. And that was actually the wrong thing to tell people, is we need kids to be introduced early and often to the allergens in their diet, and that'll help mitigate risk for most children. It's not a guarantee of prevention, but it is going to mitigate their ability to have any type of anaphylaxis.
Interesting. So we're too clean as a society with all the I mean, it was good when we were younger to play in dirt and mud.
It was. In fact, you know, if you go out and make sure to go visit a farm occasionally, a petting zoo, if you drop a lollipop on the ground, pick it up, lick it off, and hand it to your child, and that child's then going to get some of the materials from mom's mouth, and they're also going to start developing the ability to for their bodies to react and protect themselves naturally.
Wow. Ironic. Crazy. Okay, so food allergies are indeed on the rise. That's what we're looking at, and that's what we're hearing about. My biggest concern is the antidotes to them. They're so expensive, and I don't understand why that is. Is that a problem in itself, the treatment thereof?
Well, so you're talking about epinephrine devices, and we had a problem where there was a shortage right when I started my job, which was June of 2018. We went into that school year with a severe shortage. The good news is that when Scott Gottlieb was head of the FDA, he really took on this particular issue and did what we call fast-tracking approval. And what that did is it allowed five alternative products to go through the FDA approval process very quickly. And so now you actually have a number of products in market, and you have competition. Competition brings down pricing. It's still an expensive proposition because most families want to have at least two epinephrine devices on hand. Sometimes moms want to stash them in different places like at the school. But at the same time, that large cost to which you're referring and that shortage, that inability to get them, that has actually gone away.
Oh, good. Okay. You've provided me with a list of the 10 states that with the biggest increases in food allergies: Maine, North Carolina, California, Delaware, New Hampshire, Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut. When I was looking at that list, I didn't see anything in common really between these geographically or otherwise. Why do you think some states have these big increases?
We really don't know, but it raises an important question, is that we desperately need data. And in fact, FAIR is investing quite heavily in what's called a data commons center, and that will enable us, and through our patient registry, if somebody is listening and actually has a child with food allergies or they themselves do, please go on to foodallergy.org and put in your information. The more information we have on the natural history is the history of the individual with the disease, how they're living their life, what's going on in their life, what are the environmental circumstances. That's going to give us the information where we can develop therapies and diagnostics to help people in states like the ones that you just listed.
Wow. I think you're talking about a 400% increase. That's like, I didn't even know percentages went that high. I mean, that's incredible.
It is. It's really frightening. It's, you know, and again, we do look at a number of factors. We look at the hygiene theory. We look at the fact that we've told people not to feed these allergens to their children. Yeah. But we also have this thing called the gut microbiome. And that's really the question that hasn't quite been answered. FAIR's been funding some studies mm-hmm. in this area and research. You have to understand what's causing the disease to build. And so we have this thing called the leaky gut. Why is it that yeah. we're having food sensitivities and food allergies right. on the rise?
Yeah. I mean, that's a leaky gut. I don't know the exact definition of that, but you're talking about intestinal problems and gut reactions, which I think...
Right. Layers of protection.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, there's a program that has been developed, a campaign. Tell me about that.
Sure. We have what's called the Contains Courage campaign. And the reason we developed this program is that we believe that kids with food allergies aren't problems to be solved. They're assets to be gained. And so what we wanted to do is focus on the child. And that child contains courage. And we wanted to focus on what they're not just the kid with the peanut allergy that has to go sit by themselves. It's not just the dairy girl that has a dairy allergy. You know, they're taekwondo, they're musicians, they're school body presidents. They have apps that they've created. Sure. We want to focus on the whole child and then say, and by the way, this courageous person with life-threatening food allergy.
Yeah. If someone is having a child, is the advice not to coddle it so much as far as its environment is concerned? I mean, do pediatricians actually diagnose food allergies that early in life? When does that usually start happening?
You know, it's interesting. What I should tell you is I'm calling you from Washington, D.C., where we have 150 families, which are parents and their kids, going to Capitol Hill, because I've had an opportunity to talk to these folks over the last 24 hours. I'm finding out that different kids in the room were diagnosed at different stages. One girl, who was about a month and a half, 2 months old, obviously a dairy allergy. Right. Some kids, it was 4 months old. And other kids, there was a child that we talked to the other day. It's about 8 or 10 years old. They didn't really figure out what was going on until quite recently. Yeah. So the question that we all have, and one reason we so desperately need people to enter their history into our patient registry is, what is it that's going on in that person's life that's causing them to have a reaction at a different time as someone else, or what we call the threshold, because we don't know how much food a person has to eat in order to have a reaction. Yeah. For some people, it's just a trace. They can die with just a trace of the food. Yeah. Other people, it might be eating a little bit more.
Yeah, it varies to reaction. I know that's part of this conversation. Is this transmissible through the parent? In other words, if the parent did something in their lives that was different and then they had the child, does the child pick up on what happened to the parent in the parent's life?
We don't know. And part of the reason we don't know is that the rise in this food allergy started in the mid-90s to around 1998. So those kids are the first ones graduating from college, and they're the first one having, so you've got food allergic kids, possibly having children, but we haven't, they're still relatively young. We have talked to a young woman who has a severe dairy allergy, and she's really concerned about getting pregnant because how does she breastfeed? How does she feed the child? Is the child going to have the allergy? So we have this population of kids right now who are new college graduates going into the workforce, contemplating whether or not they can travel to India or China on business, who are also wondering, will this affect my children? And we have parents who are there, parents going, will this affect my grandchildren?
Interesting. Well, I know there are a lot of people listening to this that that have questions and that are involved in these questions. So where do they go for the answers?
They go to foodallergy.org, and that's the FAIR website for food allergy research and education. And they look at the website, they go in, we've got a wonderful search engine, and so you can search whatever information you're looking for. And even if you do not have a life-threatening food allergy, but you know someone who does, get on, because you can do many things in your life to mitigate risk for another person. One is recognition of anaphylaxis. Another is just being very careful and cognizant about ensuring that there's no cross-contamination when you prepare a meal for that person.
Wonderful. One more time, that website, please.
It's foodallergy.org.
Great. She's Lisa Gable. She's the CEO of Food Allergy Research and Education. Thank you for doing what you do, and a pleasure speaking to you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. And there you have it. What a wonderful show this was. I'm kind of shocked myself, to be honest with you. I didn't know the show's got this good. I'm trying to make you think that it was great by suggesting that it was. This is what Trump does. He suggests certain things in a very adamant way to the point where you have to believe it because he is just so crazy. That's what I was doing differently than you. Hey, guess where I'm going on vacation? I'm going to American Samoa. I'll be going on Thursday, and I'm going to be sitting on the American Samoa beach facing New Zealand. And, who does this? Who flies? Can you fly to American Samoa with 55,000 people? I doubt there's an airport. I think it's going to require a helicopter or a boat, or maybe like a rowboat or something. I can't imagine. And everything has to be shipped there or flown there if there isn't even a place to land. So like if you want a carrot stick, that's $2,000 because it has to be flown in.
I'd like to order a carrot stick, please.
All right, I'll be here next Thursday, and that'll be $2,000. Wow. Do you think they have any drive-thrus in American Samoa? Do they have any roads? How about that? Without a road, you can't really have a drive-thru, can you? Can you have a drive-in movie? No, not if there's no roads or no cars. Or no land to put it on, or no mosquito-laden meadows and bogs. Why do they always put drive-in movie theaters in the places where there's the most mosquitoes? Got to tell you something, a place with a lot of mosquitoes, I kind of try to avoid it, not watch a movie in it. I know what you're thinking. Yeah, I'm done. It's okay. I'm leaving. Don't worry about it. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, well, I wish you peace. Congratulations, Bloomberg. Man, what a great win. By the way, the front runner now, in case you don't know, is Joe Biden. He is now the front runner. He has more of these delegate things, points, than Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden's on the path to actually winning a nomination. That was a turn of events, and a good turn of events at that.